responsibility to his wife is, and the wife's responsibility to the husband is, right? And subjection. Reverence is also included in that. Okay? The word for love, you must remember, in Ephesians chapter 5 is the same word that is used in the Greek language when he speaks about Christ loving the world, or God loving the world. John chapter 3, it says, "For God so loved the world." You probably know that there are more than one word in the original language which has been translated love. You've all heard of the filio, and you've heard of the agape, and there are even more. But those are the two main ones. Now, the word filio is the idea of affection. I love you, but I might be saying I have a deep fondness for you. I'm very fond of you. I have an affection for you. That's the word filio. It is also the word from which Philadelphia comes, and Philadelphia means brotherly love. Let Philadelphia continue, Hebrews says. Let brotherly love continue. But there's another word for love, which is the word agape, and that is the deepest kind of love that there is. That's the love that God has for us. God doesn't filial us. God agape us. God loves us with a love that asks no return, a love that doesn't seek its own, a love that is just a giving type of a love. God loved the world and he gave. Now that's the word that he's using in Ephesians chapter 5. He doesn't say, "Husbands, filial your wife." He says, "Husbands, agape your wife." We're to love our wives with the same kind and quality of love that God has for the church. And that's saying a lot. That's saying a lot. Now, obviously, we're going to miss the perfection of that. But that's the standard that God has set for us. So if anybody ever comes to you and says, "I love my wife too much," as one did to a Christian counselor, says, "I just think I love my wife too much." I think it was Howard Hendricks, who by this time you know is one I quote the most. Howard Hendricks said, "Is that right? Do you love her as much as Christ loved the church?" "Well, no." He says, "Well, then you don't love her too much. Because you're to love your wife as Christ loved the church." And that's an awfully lot. Okay? It's a fact today, but I think before we look at the facts and all those things, that we're going to take a look at some of these questions. So if you will take your question sheet and turn to chapter 2, we'll run through them and it won't take very long. Then we'll go through our outline. Okay. That would be chapter 2 in the middle of your book. And the three goals for this chapter should include to discover two basic guidelines for successful marriage, which we will discuss a minute later. Number 2 goal is to be reminded of the Bible pattern for sex. Number 3 is to find suggestions for avoiding financial conflict. So in those last two, he has dealt very briefly in this book, dealt very briefly on two of the major problems for unhappiness in marriage relationships. Two of the basic causes, two of the major causes for divorce today: money problems and sexual problems. Okay, the book that we're dealing with and our little subject on Wednesday night are nothing more than just a little throw in here because we don't have much time, and all these things are going to be dealt with in more detail in the succeeding meetings. So question number 9 says, according to the author, what trend will marriage take in the future of your society, and which one would it be? First one, more people will consider it a temporary relationship. That's one of the reasons why there is so much divorce today. 1 out of 3. Number 10, in this chapter, Richard DeHaan suggested two basic requirements for a successful marriage. What are they?
Total self-discipline.
All right. Total involvement and self-discipline. Number 11. We're going to be talking about those in just a minute. Number 11, according to Ephesians 5, 22 to 25, what is the pattern for the husband's relationship with his wife? Daryl. I want you to answer my question. Anyone?
As Christ loved the church.
Okay, the pattern is as Christ loved the church. And then in question 12, in the same passage, what is the model for the wife's relationship with her husband? Yes. No, you're not with us. You're a question behind. It's question 12. In the same passage, what is the model for... Yes, I did say it. I get what you mean. I said it a minute ago when we started. Okay. But what was it? Repetition is the law of learning. Right. I think submission is the word that we probably ought to use here, because submission is much stronger than respect. I might respect somebody that I don't submit to. See? So we would use the word submission, right? And this is the scriptural teaching for the wife to submit to her husband. Doesn't say if she likes to do it or if he's easy to get along with. Or anything like that. Point blank. I've not checked the word, but I would think so. I would have to be sure about that by checking the Greek dictionary. All right. So what he's doing is taking a divine relationship. No, I should restate that. What he's doing is taking earthly relationships to teach divine truths. He is taking a husband-wife relationship to show us the relationship that the church is to have to Christ. And that's one reason, that's number one reason why a wife submits to her husband. Of course, basically because God says so. But secondly, she is demonstrating a beautiful picture. And the picture is that the church is subject to Christ. And that's what this is all about in Ephesians chapter 5. Now the next one. What two things most often threaten to replace the total involvement of the husband in a marriage? And it says see page 13, and that's a misprint. It should have been see page 11. So you had trouble. So did my wife. I looked at her book and she has blanks there, because she was trying to find them on page 13 and it ain't there. But it is on page 11. So did anybody find it? Okay, you got to sum those up now and put them under one or two. All right, and when you sum up all of those things that you're saying, you know, yeah, and what's the basic cause for all of this? Right, selfishness. He's not meeting her needs. Okay, that's one of the big things that threaten to replace the total involvement of the husband in a marriage. He's not meeting her needs, and I forget what the other one was because I didn't get that one down either in my notes. Does anybody see the other one on page 11? What? Okay. Number 14. How does the author suggest you can establish and maintain total involvement in the marriage? Check the correct answer out of the three. Come on, folks. Come on, folks. Hmm? B. All right. All right. B. Mark the following statements about marriage, either true or false. All right. True or false. If you didn't get your book done, you ought to be able to answer these anyway. Sex is merely a biological function.
False.
False. Fornication is sinful and degrading.
True.
Very true. Sex within a marriage relationship can be a rich and meaningful experience. The sexual instinct is like hunger and thirst and should be fulfilled regardless of the prohibitions. What?
False.
False. That's what I thought somebody said.
Oh.
Oh. Number, letter E, adultery is sinful and degrading. And F, all sex is wrong within or without the marital relationship. Okay? And 16 for the last. What four suggestions are given for overcoming disagreements about money? Four ways to solve or to avoid those disagreements. Very good one. Merlin, what do you have? I tell you, if I had a class of students in school and they were cooperating like you folks do, I'd plunk them all. Okay. Part, yes.
Alright.
Let her have all she wants. You missed on that one. Alright. If you look on page 15, you can find them if you didn't get the answers. Right at the top, about the second paragraph. They're listed right close there. Four suggestions are given for overcoming disagreements about money.
Discuss all expenditures.
Okay, discuss your major expenditures. Number two.
Should not insist on things they cannot afford.
Okay, don't make purchases you can't afford. Number three.
Pray to the Lord's guidance.
All right. And number four.
Merlin. Stay ahead
of the news. Nope. That's included in one of the other ones. You missed the first one because you started too far down.
Be open and honest.
Okay. Be open and honest. And those are ways of avoiding financial difficulties. All right. The first thing we're going to start out with our outline tonight is fact. And it's a fact that we don't have to dwell on, that there is a tremendous breakdown in husband and wife relationships today. Now, when we talk about the fact that there's one out of three divorces, that doesn't give us a clear picture at all. That's not including those 75% of the people who say that they are unhappily married even though they're holding the thing together. This is a pretty dismal picture today in our society. So out of the two-thirds of the marriages where they're maintaining the marriage relationships, 75% of those say that they are not happily married. So that's a serious and a solemn fact. But now wherever you have a fact, there's got to be a cause. And the cause for the breakdown in family life is the breakdown in marriage relationships, because the family will never be better than the husband and a wife or the father and a mother make it. So if a family is going to break down, then it's going to start with the husband and the wife. So there's where the breakdown comes in. This is why children today are maladjusted. Children today are upset, having nervous breakdowns, lots of conflicts, and distorted opinions of home life because of the breakdown in marriage relationships. And these breakdowns in marriage relationships are caused by society's common view of marriage. Now, what do you think we might mean by that expression? That's taken from your book. Let me rephrase my question. What effect does that statement have on marriage relationships? Or how does it have an effect?
In the end, when you get married, you should get divorced about leaving and getting married.
Okay. Very true. In fact, I think it was Howard Hendricks who said it's easier to get a marriage license than it is to join the Masons. And it's easier to raise children than it is, you know, do anything when you get married, you just naturally raise children. And yet he pointed out how totally disqualified people are, young people especially, when they go get their license for their marriage and run to the preacher and for $5-$10 get a license and a little donation to the preacher and it's all said and done. And then they start raising children because that's what comes biologically next, and they're totally disqualified. Now, of course, he didn't say what the alternative to this is, but I think for us Christians there is an alternative. And I think that we Christians, first of all, it starts in the home. We need to be training and teaching our children, and you don't wait until they start dating to start training them what the laws of God are, because you might find you're a little bit too late. It's when these kids are growing up that they begin learning. You don't throw the whole book at them. A child that's 10 years old doesn't need to know how to date. That's obvious. But as a child begins getting older and his mentality develops, and he begins, and you can sense when that child begins getting interested in the opposite sex. You can tell it immediately. Place a little boy on a chair and set some pretty little girl down beside him, and he'll squirm and he'll push away and he'll shove way down to the other end of the bench because he doesn't want to sit by that little girl. He feels embarrassed. But give him another few years, man, he'll think that's the greatest thing that ever happened to him. Some pretty little blonde or little brunette comes and sits down beside him. Now that shows that his attitudes are changing and he's beginning to get attracted to the opposite sex. You better be moving in, parents. Now is the time to start teaching that child the do's and don'ts of good dating habits. Because I'll tell you, most of the kids today date and they don't know what dating habits are all about. They don't have the foggiest idea. You see, what this statement is saying is that we, and even we Christians, are influenced by the common opinion of the world around us. You might call it peer group pressure, but it isn't exactly that. It's just that we see so much of this and we hear so much of this that pretty soon we become callous to it and we think that this is a normal thing. See? We began thinking that this is a normal thing in our American society for people to have illicit sex, to have divorce, and everything else. So we, even we Christians, are affected by society's common view of marriage, which is a deteriorating view and getting worse. Because, as he pointed out in the book, people's idea of this is that in a short while, there's not even going to be such a thing as marriage relationships. In fact, there's a lot of that going on right now. You don't get married, just go and live together. And don't bother with any kind of a ceremony, or don't bother with any of that stuff. Just live together and that's all necessary. Well, that's not according to the Word of God, to say the least. All right. Number two, lack of total involvement. That's one that we had before us a minute ago in our questions. The cause for the breakdown in husband-wife relationships is a lack of total involvement, and that means giving oneself totally for the other. I think Lowell touched on this the other night. It's a giving of a total self. How much do I give myself to my partner, to my spouse? Not only the man who gives himself to the woman, but the woman who gives herself to the man. Love is giving. If you want a definition for love and an identification word for love, love is giving. Lust is taking. Lust says, I want, I want. But love says, I give, I give. And so a good relationship must involve the total commitment of one person to the other. And when we're talking about the total person, he's made up of three parts. What are they? Body, soul, and spirit. Okay. That was a nice duet. The body, physical. The soul, emotional. And the spirit, spiritual. Now, if we had a lot of time to talk upon this, I'd go into a little more detail here, but let me just throw out this. Usually with a couple who starts dating, the first attraction that they have to each other is physical. The guy looks at the girl and says, wow, she is beautiful. And so he has a physical attraction to her. On the basis of that, he may even date her with nothing more than a physical attraction. But after he dates her for a little while, more or less time, he finds out that they have a lot of likes and dislikes that are the same, and they become emotionally involved. They find out that they like to do a lot of the same things, and pretty soon he begins to like the girl because he likes her personality and so on, and she likes his. Now they're becoming involved emotionally, or that soulish involvement. Now, this is as far as marriage relationships get in the unsaved. On the basis of these two things, unsaved kids marry, right? That's as far as they go. They like each other's body, and they get taken up. The girl gets taken up with a boy's body because it's strong and muscular. The boy gets taken up with a girl's body because she's got beautiful eyes and beautiful hair and a nice shape and all the right measurements and all that kind of stuff. And so that's purely physical. If a marriage takes place at that level, it's doomed, for sure. But most marriages, even among the unsaved, get beyond that point where they become emotionally involved and they find out that they like each other's personality. Now their souls are becoming involved. But the Christian has a third security. And he has the real security to his marriage because they become spiritually involved. The guy says, hey, you're a Christian. And I'm a Christian, and we have the same desires, and we can pray together, and we can read the Bible together, and we can go to youth groups together, and we can do a lot of spiritual things together. Now you see they're becoming spiritually united as well. And if you don't have this third link, then you've got an incomplete one. And those are the kind that usually break up. Now it isn't for sure that even a Christian will have a strong spiritual link, because if neither one of them are spiritual, then you don't have a strong spiritual link. So if you've got two spiritual people who are united body, soul, and spirit, you've got the basis for a good marriage. Now, a little bit on this immaturity over here. Immaturity is one of the big problems in marriage relationships. And immaturity is simply the opposite of love and giving. Because immaturity is the inability to give. That's the definition of immaturity. An immature person is one who can't give. Only takes. And that's selfishness. So selfishness and immaturity are synonymous words. Selfishness says, give me what I want, let me do what I wish, and make me feel real good. Make me feel special. And that is for sure immaturity. When a person says, I want to do what I want, let me go where I wish, and I want you to make me feel real good. That's for sure. Because it's all centered on the ego. It's centered on self. All right, now we're going to talk just for a little bit about husbands' weaknesses. And we're sure you ladies will enjoy this very much. What would you suggest as being some of the things that husbands may lack in that contribute to this lack of total involvement? Now let me repeat my question. What are some of the weaknesses and some of the things that husbands do or fail to do which indicates that he is not giving himself wholly and totally to his wife? Natural tendencies. Doesn't fit everybody, but generally speaking. Yeah? Pride? But what are some of the things that we do or lack doing?
Showing her love. Lack
of communication. All right, lack of communication, showing her, lack of showing her love. Of course, the answers that I've taken from the book are simpler than the ones that you're coming up with. I think your answers are all involved in this, but it's just simply
lack of tenderness.
Yeah, right? But here's the way, here you're all saying the same thing, which is tremendous, tremendously good. How do these lacks show up? All right? A lack of total involvement means that I'm not giving tenderness toward my wife. I'm not giving her the love that I should give her. How does it show up in a practical sense? And it's just as simple as this. Sports. What does a husband do? He's all taken up with sports, overemphasis, of course, abnormal, and she doesn't particularly care to go along, and he's out every blessed night in some kind of a sports activity, and his wife's sitting home. Now, if they're doing this together, that throws a different light on it. But I mean, when the husband is totally involved in sports, you see, he's doing what he likes. I like sports. I'm going to do something every night in the sports area. And his wife doesn't like that much sports. So she's sitting home there, pining away while he's out kicking up his heels. He can do the same thing with his hobbies. He can become so involved in his hobbies. Young couples sometimes have a problem here. A young guy has got a hobby maybe of fixing up old automobiles or fixing up race cars. So what does he do? He comes home from work, gobbles down his supper, and after supper until 12 o'clock at night, he's out fooling with his race car or his motorcycle or whatever his hobby happens to be. And what's his little wife doing? Sitting in the house, waiting for his love, waiting for some companionship, wishing that he would come into her and show her as much attention as he's showing that Honda motorcycle and so on. So his hobbies can do it. And then TV can do it. TV can be the robber that keeps me from giving myself to my wife. I can become so involved in TV that I don't give her the time that she needs. Believe me, I see this happening among Christians. And then, of course, the man can become so involved in his business, in his farming, in his business, or whatever he's got, that that's the whole preoccupation of his life. And all this time, he's failing to give himself to his wife. He could cut back on any of these areas and give more time to his wife, and she would be very appreciative of that. And it would help build a better relationship if he would. Business is eating out too many people's marriage relationships. But the wife could have some weaknesses. In fact, any of these weaknesses could be in reverse. It could be the wife's weaknesses too. She might be the one who is involved in TV and doesn't have time for him and so on. But these are more generally characteristic of the man. Now, what would be some of the areas of weakness where the wife might figure in this? Because she's got to give herself to her husband just as much as the husband's got to give himself to the wife. So what could be the things that would hinder the wife from giving herself to her husband in a total involvement? Where would you see that a woman would be tempted? You may not be able to answer that question. Whoa, because of time, look. She could become a socialite. Women are a little more tempted to become socialites, running around, you know, all the time involved in social life. That's woman's temptation. Man could do it, but woman more likely. Church activities. Women usually get more involved in church activities than men do. It's more of a temptation for women to get so busy in church activities they don't have time for their husband. Church activities are fine, but they can get out of place. And then she can, sure, she should care for her house, but she can become so involved in running the dust rag over every piece of furniture twice a day when there's really no dust there, she becomes so involved with her house that she's neglecting her husband, you know, overemphasis on any of those things. And then she might even do that in an abnormal intention with the children. Sometimes mothers have a tendency, a lot more than husbands do, to give themselves unbalanced to the children. Now, I don't mean that wives and mothers shouldn't take care of their children, but I mean they can just pour their whole lives into their children, and the husband, he's sitting off here. And do you know that sometimes husbands feel jealous of their own children? They feel very jealous because they had the wife's attention until the children came along, and now the wife has no longer got time for her husband. As long as he brings in the bread and the butter, that's about all that she cares. She puts her whole interest into the children, and he feels very left out. And that's a very bad situation, if it's abnormal, of course. So there's where the woman's weakness can come in. And I don't believe that children should ever come between a husband and a wife. I think the relationship between a husband and a wife is closer than between parents and children. You may not like that, but that is true.
It should strengthen.
Huh?
It should strengthen.
Right. It surely should. The children should strengthen the parents, right. But sometimes they come in as a wedge because... And the reason that it's more normal for a woman to do that is because she's the one that bore the child. She went through the pain and the suffering and carried the child for all this time. So it's more normal for a woman to suffer that. And then we're going to have to finish up here. Lack of self-discipline is number 3. And the lack of self-discipline shows up in sex, and Christians must view sex not as a simple biological act. This is what's happening in our world today. Our world today says, if it feels good, do it, and they simply have abused sex to the point that, you know, it doesn't make any difference whether it's in the marriage covenant or not, whether it's an expression of love. It's animal type. Now, when animals mate, they don't communicate love. That's a biological act. It's instinct, and there's no love expressed between them. But, of course, with people, it is certainly different. It's not a biological function, and then the other thing to avoid is selfishness. Then the big danger in money? Well, there is money dangers. The husband's danger oftentimes is that he feels it's all his, and his wife has a hard time eking out any more than just enough to go to the grocery store and back again, and he gets the idea that all the money that comes into their bank account is his because he went out and made it. And he won't hardly let his wife have anything. And that, of course, is a bad situation because they are sharers together in this. And then sometimes in his immaturity, he spends it all on himself. She can't have the things that she hardly needs, more than just the very bare necessities, but he's out spending it again on his hobbies, on his race car, on his motorcycle, or whatever he may have. And boy, he can blow it, but his wife gets nothing. And then the wives have a problem here sometimes of overspending on clothes and household furniture. So she brings pressure on her husband because she wants. Pretty soon she wants more than he can possibly afford. And she brings a lot of pressure on him. And any time that pressure is brought on either partner, then you've got a potential for trouble. Okay. Well, I guess our time is more than gone. So that's just sort of a little outline of what was in your book. And I guess we better close.